Hey fam, and welcome to ReWoke, Rewriting Our Kids Education Podcast. My name is Michelle Person, and we are on a journey. We are rethinking, re-examining, and re-educating ourselves and our children. On today's episode, we will be talking about being woke at school. If a school is truly committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, what does that look like? How do we hold schools accountable for doing this very important work? My guest today is Dr. Dominic Rollins, the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at the Dalton School. And as the director, that is his job, making sure that this work gets done. And he is going to share with us how they do it at the Dalton School in New York City and how other institutions might start this very important work.
Dr. Rollins, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I'm super excited to be here.
Yay. Well, first of all, tell everybody who's watching, describe your current work. Describe for us what you do.
Absolutely. So I serve as the Chief Diversity Officer, and like many organizations and schools, there is a need to have a senior leadership position dedicated to holding an institution accountable for being as diverse, equitable, inclusive, and I would say as anti-racist as possible. And that means forwarding a vision for that work, coming up with strategic initiatives to implement that work, and educating the community on what that means and what that looks like.
Your job serves school students in grades K through 12, correct?
It does. It serves the students K through 12. It serves faculty and staff. It serves parents and families. It serves alum. Unfortunately or fortunately, it serves everybody.
Well, then that kind of leads into my next question, which is, you know, what does that look like when you're working with five-year-olds? How does it look when you're working with high schoolers? How does it look when you're working with staff? What does it look like when you're working with parents? Like, I'm sure the work looks different in every arena.
It does. And let me first start by saying a way that it looks similar.
Okay.
And a way that it looks similar is that we all have needs, and we want our needs to be realized in the places that we learn. Mm-hmm. We all have needs to be seen, heard, valued, respected. And we want to have that done, have that need met in the communities in which we work, in the communities in which we learn. Mm-hmm. And I start there because it's universal, and yet how you would go about it and what that means, for instance, to a five-year-old is most certainly different than a veteran teacher, right?
Okay.
For a five-year-old, their need to be heard and seen is evolving, and they don't understand it fully for themselves, but they have it. And they blurt things out, and they ask questions, and they are incredibly animated as they discover the world. Our world has already, you know, indicated certain notions and assumptions about different five-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult for a five-year-old who is of color, or a five-year-old who is emerging to become gender nonconforming, or a five-year-old who is not speaking English as their first language, to have their needs met in a world that has obviously assumptions and stereotypes already made in. Mm-hmm. And so for our five-year-olds, it's really like helping them to understand, how do you actually talk about, navigate, name identity in how you're interacting with one another?
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that interaction with one another, what information are we giving you about who you are and how the world works?
Amazing, because I've talked with a couple of other leaders and the work that we are all doing and trying to create more diverse and inclusive spaces, and that need to be heard resonates, you know, across the board. I think that it's interesting that at that level, at elementary, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, the need is more to be heard. What I've heard from other people is, as we get older, it also kind of morphs into a need to be able to feel comfortable within ourselves having hard conversations. So I guess, do you find that to be the case? Meaning as people get older, not only do they feel a need to be heard, there's also in themselves a push that they have to be willing to push through to understand that they do hold some of those constraints and thought mm-hmm. processes and frameworks that, you know, through no fault of their own, even if you are actively trying to be anti-racist, sure. you are a product of your environment. And so one of the things that I found that in older people that we have to work on is making them feel okay saying the things that they want to push down. And I don't know if you want to speak on that or if your experiences are different.
No, my experiences are consistent with that. And one reason that those ideas emerge is we go through our lives collecting more information and experiencing a lot more dissonance, particularly when we are in a cultural minority. When we don't have our narratives reflected back to us, we are making sense of the world as outsider. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much making sense of that you can do on your own mm-hmm. internally. And so this need to be able to have difficult conversations, I think, arises from a need to be able to explicate what one's experience is that isn't necessarily consistent in the world, because the world has been set up to revolve around one singular narrative and to really uphold power. Mm-hmm. And you don't understand that actually as a kid, partly because it's not your reality. Right. I mean, more often than not, for a five-year-old, we can, to some extent, create a cocoon of a reality that reflects them in ways that are really positive and reinforcing, and especially if we turn off the television. Mm-hmm. However, for a 15-year-old, it's not possible.
Right.
And this need to, you know, no longer just have voice, but also to be able to use voice and to use that voice to literally make utterances that are not the status quo, I believe is as a result of making sense of this isn't consistent for me.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't fair for me. This isn't how I see the world. And I need to be able to say that to, you know, other human beings who are of consequence, right? Who are either my parents or who are school teachers or who are my peers. I need to see whether or not they have the same understanding that I have.
Mm-hmm. I guess that makes it so hard because it is the where people are, where people fall on the spectrum, so heavily determines what it is they need. So my next question is, what was going to be, where do we need to improve first? But I think as I'm listening to you, where we need to improve first is almost dependent upon which group we're talking about. But that would mean that we have to have multiple improvement points, which is hard to do. You're trying to grab everybody together and come together and pick one focus so that you can kind of create a common thought, create a common movement. So I guess given that your work encompasses, like you said, the from the five-year-old to the 15-year-old, from the faculty members to the community in which you serve, where should we improve first?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the question for many organizations and many schools. And you know, and one thought is, well, if we first improve with our faculty and staff, those who have the penultimate responsibility for our kids, they will ultimately create the environments that kids need in order to be able to thrive, engage, be in these conversations. And there's, I think, some truth to that. And yet, there's a lot of opportunity for our kids. And so I've stopped actually trying to get the sequence completely right. Like, I think that there is more right than wrong that one should be going after. But because people in general are on such different journeys, journeys around awareness, journeys around a diagnosis of what the key issues are, journeys around a reckoning of the history, stories, and information that they have been shared, that has been told to them, that trying to like figure out who or where to start first is difficult, given that there are like so many dimensions to where like any one person can be. And with that, I think the place where I've gotten to has been, well, how do we build capacity for whomever, wherever they are?
Okay.
And that doesn't always lend itself to the most systematic or strategic approach, because you could have an infinite number of places where any one person can be, particularly, you know, the 5-year-old to the 15-year-old. But when I reflect and ask myself that question, that does actually enable me to meet people individually where they're at on their journey to understanding and really reckoning.
Sounds like more of a, it's a case by case basis. You kind of have to talk to, get to know a person individually, get to know an organization individually, figure out where they are on their journey and meet them there, which for my teachers who are watching, I know can completely relate to, because that's what we try to tell policymakers about kids. You can't just expect us to be able to get this kid to pass this test. I have to take this kid where they are when they come in my room and meet them there. And I can grow them, possibly, but I can't, you know, I can't take them at a pre-primer level and say they're going to be writing at a 6th grade level by the end of the year. That's not realistic. So I think that idea of meeting people where they are on this diversity, inclusion, and equity journey is, you know, is awesome. My question then, because I have parents that watch, you know, that are interested in this as well. And so I guess for them, I would assume that most parents feel that they are further along on the journey, especially parents of color, who are probably further along on the journey. They know something's not right. They know they need to be advocates. They know they want to hold people accountable. They're not quite sure how can they do it. So in your experience, being that you do work in the secondary elementary setting, what advice might you give to parents who are trying to figure out how to hold their educational organizations accountable for making sure that they are at least some beginning on the journey, talking about the journey, you know, and given the fact that we just said that everybody's in a different place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's such an important question. And before I would ask a parent to think about and consider school leaders or teachers, I would want them to consider, where are they with their own kid? So the reason that I say that is because I actually think that sometimes parents imbue a certain kind of meaning of experience onto their kid and the education that isn't always accurate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a like, I remember when, or sometimes mm-hmm. it was like, this was what my experience was, or sometimes the experience is so disconnected. So I may have attended one kind of school and my kid is now attending a different kind of school. So when you begin to advocate for accountability, you have to do that from a real place of data. Mm-hmm. And what's that data? And is that data the actual experience sort of your kid? Or are we sort of contextualized in a current moment where here are all the things that are happening, but is that what's happening with your kid at your school? Having some sort of intimacy of understanding with your kid mm-hmm. and what you're presenting, and having that then be the thing that you are advocating on behalf of, I think is hugely important. And I say this as someone who have been in conversations with parents where I go, I actually don't think that reflects like our kids' current experiences. Or rather, I think that our kids are using a different language. Or rather, I think that our kids have more facility to be in this conversation, and you are exercising some level of restraint around this conversation, that our kids are like, no, we talk about this. We don't know that they talk about it because it's like, you know, some chat with their friends, but they are totally sort of in vogue, so to speak, with language and concepts that sometimes parents are not. If we were to move into the actual action of accountability, I would be starting that with, what does school leadership have as the expectations for the students that they are producing? Like, you can't expect to hold school leadership accountable to a thing that they don't aspire to do.
That is very powerful. So basically, first make sure that where your kids are is where you need them to be, because it doesn't. Sure. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And so, like, you can't expect a school to produce kids who will have empathy across difference, an ability to talk about identities, and have a correct and accurate account of our history if that's not a thing that we say we're going to do. Now, you might be wondering, well, how the hell could a school not say that they were going to do that? But some schools right now have to actually clarify what it is they're setting out to do in a climate and culture that's calling for more, because they didn't know that was the thing that they needed to do.
Yeah, they're figuring it out as they go.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I think both of those points, I mean, parents, I hope you're listening. Like, number one, you have to make sure that you are figuring out where your kid is, really. Before you go trying to hold somebody else accountable, you have to figure out where your kid is. And then once you figure out where your kid is, figure out where you have them placed before you go screaming for them to be different. Is that the right place for your kid? And is that their mission? Does their mission align with what you're trying to have your kid be exposed to? And absolutely, start from there. So I think those were both two very good pieces of advice. I know you're a very busy guy, and I want to thank you so much for taking the opportunity to talk to us today about this very important topic. You've been extremely insightful, and parents and teachers that are watching, I hope you guys really got something from this conversation. Dr. Rollins, thank you so much.
And the words of Dr. Rollins, we all have needs, and we want our needs to be realized in the places that we learn. I think that in doing this work, if we start there, the idea that everyone deserves to be seen and represented in education, as long as that is the starting point for all other work, we would be hard pressed to go wrong. Dr. Rollins, thank you again for taking time to speak with us, and thank you for listening. Show notes and resources to the things we talked about today are available on our website at www.justlikemepresents.com. Share this podcast with other educators and parents in your circle, and remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Next week, we will be talking about kidrepreneurs and how we can begin to rethink how our children think about their future today. Thanks for listening, and remember, if our children can see it, they can achieve it.
Parents, are you frustrated with traditional education? I was. Educators, are you struggling to find inclusive academic content that represents your students? I know the feeling. That is why I created Just Like Me Presents. Just Like Me Presents is a multimedia production and development company that stresses the importance of literacy, culturally relevant teaching materials, and active learning experiences. Check out our culturally responsive books and supplemental curriculums on our website, www.justlikemepresents.com. In the Just Like Me book and JLM pick sections, your child will be amazed at how many books they can choose from where the characters look like them. They've never had math explained the way we do with Remember Through Rhyme, and I can guarantee the history we share with Meanwhile in Africa isn't taught in any traditional public school. Let us help you get the tools you need to rewrite your child's education and set them on a path to success. If you have a child in kindergarten through fifth grade, trust me, you'll want to check us out. Our programs help students develop a strong sense of self, affirm their identities, and encourage critical thinking and entrepreneurial skills. Head on over to the website now at www.justlikemepresents.com and help empower your child to become the best version of themselves. And remember, if our children can see it, they can achieve it.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired of the low levels of literacy that plague the Black community? Well, guess what? This didn't happen overnight. And the root cause is most definitely racism. My name is Saisha Beckett Abdullah, and I am the creator and host of Real Reading Talk, where I not only discuss the real issues in a unapologetic, no sugarcoating chaser type of way, but I also offer real solutions. So please join me every week where you will find Real Reading Talk on most podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Anchor.
Welcome to Puffcast, your bi-weekly Harry Potter podcast, run by Puffs. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Juliana. Do you like Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Are you looking for a fun, stress-free place to just have a good conversation, play some silly games, and hear from some great guests?
Yes, please tell me more.
Oh boy, well then this podcast is for you.
We would like to invite you to join our happy common room. Get comfy, have some pizza, make new friends, and be part of the conversation. All houses are welcome.
You can find Puffcast every other Wednesday on all platforms where podcasts are found. So we'll see you in the common room. And until then, stay puffy.
And badger on.